Let me tell you a little bit about Army veteran Scott Weekly. 46 years old, a former marathon runner. He avoided smoking, drinking back in 2005 after returning from serving in Iraq and Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Kuwait. The former Army major was baffled why he was not able to do some simple things. He said, "When I got up, I could barely run a quarter of a mile. I could barely go up two or three flights of stairs. I could barely play with my son in the front yard, baseball, maybe 10 or 15 minutes. CT scans showed nothing, so he feared it was all in his mind. A lung biopsy, though, found that Weekly had a rare disease, a condition which he says he did not have before deployment. What's more, he learned that he was just one of a growing number of U.S. veterans who had served in Iraq and Afghanistan that had received the same diagnosis or had asthma or some other respiratory illness. In a moment, Nurse Joyce Riley joins us. We'll talk about this and her latest work on Coast to Coast AM. Nurse Joyce Riley has investigated the truth about the Gulf War illness for years. She's become an advocate for all veterans and citizens experimented on by government. Her websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. She also does her own program called The Power Hour, and here she is back on Coast to Coast. Joyce, how are you?
Oh, I am very good, but I wish I was better, given the fact that we've got so many of these sick vets, and they're getting worse every day. Thank you, George.
You know, you and I have gone back for so many years, and I would love to just do a show with you about good things, because every time I've had you on, Joyce, in my career, every time we're talking about some tragedy with veterans, aren't we?
We're talking not just about a tragedy with veterans. We're talking about the government's deception, the Department of Defense intentionally deceiving these veterans, which is even worse because it's all about our belief in a government. It's all about our credibility, the accountability of the government, especially when you're referring to this case of Scott Weekly. There's so much more to this story I want to tell you because it's unbelievable what they have done to try and make these veterans disappear.
And is this what we call the Gulf War syndrome, what he has, or is this something else now?
Oh, it's just one more of the different ailments that the veterans are experiencing. I don't know that you could combine it into any kind of category or illness because there's so many things that they have literally done to the veterans in exposures to make them sick. So we're talking about hundreds of thousands of these people since 1991. Many of the symptoms are the same, many different, but I'll tell you what, it is getting worse. And this group of people that are suffering from this bronchiolitis problem, which it kind of sounds like bronchitis, big deal, you know, so it doesn't sound all that bad until you understand what bronchiolitis really is. It's irreversible. It's very rare. It used to be referred to as popcorn lung. You know, when people worked in popcorn factories that made the microwave popcorn.
Right.
They got the irreversible disease. They died from it. Well, that's what's happening to these troops. But let me tell you, George, it's even more sordid than this. It's even more nefarious in what has happened here. In around 2003, a lot of soldiers from the 101st Airborne at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, were deployed to a northern part of Iraq, about 20,000 of those soldiers from the 101st, to Operation Iraqi Freedom. They were in an area called the Karaya Airfield West, in which they were exposed to a sulfur mine, the Mishrak sulfur mine. This is the largest sulfur mine in the world, and sulfur is what you're exposed to, you know, when you strike a match. Well, it's pretty toxic to the lungs. Well, there was a release there of 42 million pounds of sulfur dioxide, which is the largest man-made release ever of sulfur dioxide on record. And as a result of that, these troops were exposed to it. Injuries occur at levels of 0.1 parts per million. They were exposed to many, many times over that. Well, what happened is they returned back to Fort Campbell in 2004. And they were taken to Vanderbilt. Many of them were referred to Vanderbilt because they were so incredibly sick. Just like you said in this story here with Scott Weekly, there was also a physician who had been a marathon runner coming back home, couldn't even walk. Many of these people cannot even do a PT test any longer, physical training test, They have to walk the range. They can't even run. Well, as a result of this, they took them into Vanderbilt, and there was a doctor there who was really on top of this, checked it out, and said, wow, these people are very sick. He did biopsies, which is pretty extravagant to do a lung biopsy on these patients. You don't want to really have to do that. But they did, and it was Dr. Robert Miller. This guy deserves a tremendous amount of credit. He's associate professor of allergy, pneumonia, and critical care medicine at Vanderbilt.
Probably put his neck in the ring, didn't he?
Oh, my goodness. He found out and diagnosed more than 50 soldiers with constrictive bronchiolitis when they were exposed to these burn pits. Now, this is not just in this one area with the sulfur dioxide. It's all the burn pits that were used, because overseas, we don't dispose of waste. We just dig a great big huge hole, huge hole. I mean, like several football fields, and dump in it things like trucks that can't be used any longer, blown up pieces of equipment, arms and legs from surgery, whatever goes into this, computers, all kinds of electronic equipment. And they, of course, build the barracks fairly near this, usually the enlisted barracks. Officers get to be a little bit further down the road.
Mm-hmm.
But they breathe all this. Well, this Dr. Miller found out that these guys were all having the same thing, same problem. Well, along comes the Department of Defense and the VA, and they say, whoa, we need to have a report on this. So Dr. Miller does a report. However, in the final report, everything was taken out about this. In fact, Miller did a 32-page training letter about this. Everything about bronchiolitis was removed from the original draft after the military got a hold of it, trying to hide these troops. So the Army Times back in, I believe it was 2010, did a story, the Army wants to hide soldiers with constrictive bronchiolitis. I mean, this is criminal. This is beyond belief. And there are probably veterans sitting at home right now, Operation Enduring Freedom and Iraqi Freedom, they're sitting there trying to get a breath, not knowing what's wrong with them, not having been to Vanderbilt and had the opportunity to meet with Dr. Robert Miller. Then they took away all the care from Dr. Miller. He's no longer allowed.
They tried to what, punish him or what?
Well, they didn't punish him, but they just took all the patients away from him, said, thank you very much, you're no longer needed. We're transferring the care to Brooke Army Medical Center in San Antonio, and you're no longer needed, nor is your work. And then pretty well removed all the information from this regarding the seriousness of this, and just basically said, let's get these guys out of the military as fast as possible, and let's get them as little compensation as possible. This is a disease you die from, unfortunately.
That's shocking. That's shocking.
But it is. It really is. But is this any different than what I told you about depleted uranium?
No, not at all.
And about the vaccines? You know, when we go back and look at where we've been since 1996 in this issue, when I really got involved, and I found out that the U.S. government released a paper that stated during the past 50 years, and this is Senate Report 103-97, during the past 50 years, hundreds of thousands of our military have been experimented upon without their knowledge or consent. That changed my life. I was never the same again. And I said, wow, this is intentional. It's like manslaughter. It's like murder. It's intentional.
And it's not slowing down, is it?
Absolutely not. And I want to expose the way they cover it up, because that's how it is handled in the military. For instance, the United States government, back in the 1980s, under the Reagan administration, of course, with George Bush Sr., sold biologicals and chemicals to Iraq illegally. Now, of course, we know that Donald Rumsfeld was an alleged envoy with the Reagan administration.
Mm-hmm.
He was really with G.D. Searle Pharmaceutical Company and selling his wares over there for chemical and biological weapons. But there was the Iran-Iraq War, and the United States was providing essentially weapons to both sides. But then Iraq put the pressure on the United States. The United States said, hey, we can sell a whole bunch of weapons here to Iraq. Saddam Hussein's wife came to the United States even, and there was this major network of illegal sales of weapons through the Department of Defense, the Department of Agriculture, who gave loan guarantees for the money. So Iraq not only got the weapons, they got the loans for it. and they didn't have to pay back the loans under the Reagan administration. And I'll tell you, when I said this on the air one time, Michael Reagan got very upset that I would insinuate that his father had been involved in this. He called me out to California, and I went to where it is, Sherman Oaks out there.
Yeah,
in his office.
He, at that time, he was working with me in the same building.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And we went out, and he said, I don't believe you. He honestly, he told me on the phone, he said, I don't believe you, and I don't believe my father was involved with this. I said, it's not an issue of whether you believe me or I believe you or whatever. It's what the proof is. And he said, I want to see the evidence. And he said, I've only invited two people out to my studio to do a show at this point, but I want you to be in studio and I want to see your evidence. So I appeared there with a stack a foot high of documents.
Jeez.
Showing that the U.S. government had been involved in selling the biologicals to Iraq, of the experiments that had been done on the people without their knowledge or consent. And I got to tell you, he was absolutely shocked.
He was blown away, wasn't he?
Absolutely, yes, because this is not known to the public. Well, the United States government, around 1986, was heavily involved with a group called Matrix Churchill in Ohio, in which they had essentially a bazaar of arms there. In other words, they had brought in all these people from Iraq, and they would have all of the companies represented there. They come in, pick out which weapons they want, and they go home. The only problem is we're talking about things like biological weapons. We're talking about recombinant DNA and E. coli. We're talking about clone items. We're talking about anthrax, West Nile virus that was being sold in 55-gallon drums, which is not been attenuated or weakened. And it was capable of reproduction, which means it's not for research purposes. Well, you don't really need to be arming your alleged enemy, which in 1983, really, Iraq was our enemy. So we had to get special approval for people to be able to sell to Iraq.
Sure.
The United States government.
Even though we wanted them to destroy the Iranians.
Well, yeah, but it was really more of just being able to sell. I mean, that's how we make our money.
Right.
Is by these massive, what else are we selling in this country anyway? But so these companies, including the American Type Culture Collection, begin selling biological warfare agents to Iraq. Now, what do we think they're going to do with them? Well, they might just make biological warfare agents from them and weapons, and they sure certainly did. Well, this is part of the lie that I became aware of, and that's when I became so incensed to see that George Bush Sr. was providing these weapons under loan guarantees from the Department of Agriculture, of all things, through a bank called Banco Nacional de Lavoro of Italy, in which they gave millions and millions of dollars to Iraq to basically arm Iraq, knowing full well we might eventually go in there. So what they did was, because we wanted their oil production, even back in 1991, of course. So what they did was they began doing research on vaccines that the Tri-Service Vaccine Task Force, see, we knew what we had sold through the American Type Culture Collection and the CDC. We knew what we had sold to Iraq.
Right. We knew what they had.
Yeah. So we start making the vaccines against it. And what an amazing experimental little factory they developed with the Tri-Service Vaccine Task Force. And here you get the anthrax vaccine. We sold botulinum to Iraq, and we have botulinum vaccine testing being done. So all of this was done by design.
Did we give him, Saddam Hussein, the biologicals, the chemicals, when he used them on the Kurds?
Yes, we did. Absolutely, we did. In fact, Bell Helicopter was big involved in this, and it was called Operation Nimble Archer. Operation Nimble Archer is where the U.S. government set up Iraq. We, you know, tweaked the nozzles on the helicopters. We did everything for him to get them all set up to do this, so that he could go in and kill the Iranians and the Kurds or whomever they were attacking at the time. And so thousands of people died as a result of that. And the U.S. government and our military was backing this whole thing. So we have been behind basically the genocide, the murder, the killing of all of these countries. And then, of course, allegedly, Saddam Hussein is found to be guilty of, you know, these killing these people in Halabja. And, oh, my goodness, he was a bad guy. And we've got to, you know, kill him, which I don't know if they did or not. I really don't.
Well, and he was probably a bad guy, but he just wasn't playing ball with us anymore.
No, he was our bad guy.
Right.
Yeah, he was our bad guy. So this whole entrance then into Iraq is planned. It's designed, along with April Glaspie, you know, having a tacit nod toward Iraq and saying, hey, if you go into Kuwait, you know, it's kind of like your own business. We don't have any opinion on that. And then you had this amazing situation that occurred that it is like the most, in history to me, fraudulent game that was played with the American public. And that was that girl, Naira, the incubator story, in which they developed this atrocity situation like they do in Iraq, like they do in Syria, like they do everywhere. Oh, they are so horrible. We must go in there and give them our form of democracy. And that's what happens, is by painting them as being really bad. Well, the Commerce Department was involved with this, and a lady called Lori Fitzpagato. Now, all of this information has been taken off the government printing office list, but I got it out of a Senate hearing 103-900, in which Lori Fitzpagato, with Hill & Knowlton Advertising Agency, got involved in forming this group called Citizens for a Free Kuwait. And they hired this lobbying firm of Hill & Knowlton, paid them $10 million to create this Naira story. Naira being a young girl who was supposedly either a nurse or a volunteer in the hospital in Kuwait. And according to the alleged story by Hill & Knowlton...
That's the same company, I think, that Google hired to go after WikiLeaks.
Oh, really? I was not aware of that. Interesting.
No, maybe it's not. Maybe that's a different company.
Well, Hill & Knowlton's changed their name since then because of a little bit of bad press, and I can be given any credit for that. I would appreciate that. But this baby incubator fraud was supposedly this 15-year-old Kuwaiti girl that was identified only as Naira, testified before Congress. But she said in this crying, and it's on the Internet, you can actually see it, saying that these Republican soldiers, they came in and they took the babies out of the incubator and they threw them on the cold floor. And then they bayoneted the babies.
All made up.
Yes. But that got me to go back to Kelly Air Force Base, which is where my story started in this. And I said, wow, if they're killing babies, I'm going to go do what I can do to serve my country, which is what every red-blooded American person does, male or female. Many times in their life, they say, I'm going to go serve. Well, the story was a fraud. The story was repeated by George Bush Sr. It was repeated in a number of congressional committee hearings. It was all fraud. It was all fraud. The strategy was to use alleged witnesses.
And it got more publicity as a fraud story than it did uncovering the fraud.
Bingo.
Yeah.
I mean,
Joyce, we're going to take this break, but we're going to come right back with you. You're on for 2 hours. We're going to take calls next hour as well. More with Nurse Joyce Riley on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Nurse Joyce Riley and specifically you vets, if you would check in with us. And we'll be back. We'll talk more with her about this on Coast to Coast AM, what's happening to our vets when we come right back. And welcome back. We're with Nurse Joyce Riley. Joyce, tell us about the Power Hour, by the way. Lots of folks would like to listen in on what you do.
Well, thank you very much. The first hour, we do the news. That's our form of the news, which we call the news that CNN seems to lose. And we cover a lot of the issues that, unfortunately, you just don't hear in mainstream. We give you the other side of the story, like what we're talking about right now.
Sure.
And then the second and third hour, we talk to guests that are very provocative usually and have the other side of the story also, investigating new issues such as right now we're taking a look at, believe it or not, the Tucson shooting with Representative Giffords, some things that are just not making sense with that. And, you know, that strikes people as very strange. But you know what? They have taught us how to treat them. And I challenge everything now. And so this gentleman, Dallas Goldbug, YouTube, has done some amazing work on exposing what's going on with that. So we've been doing that, and that, I got to tell you, is pretty frightening, what I've learned thus far, and we're going to be giving out more information on that. But that's the kind of program we have.
And you've been doing it for how long now?
About 10 years.
Yeah.
About 10 years. And what I want to know is the truth. That's all I want. I don't care if it's so dark and ugly. I just want to know the truth. And that's why I investigate, and a lot of other people investigate. You know, back to the, just real quickly on the issue of, by the way, that program airs 7 to 10 a.m. Central Time. And it's thepowerhour.com. But, you know, we were talking about this baby incubator fraud. This is such a huge, huge story. And it's all in a video by Massimo Mazzucco called
He's the Italian film producer, right?
Yes. He's incredible. This film, New American Century, has everything in it. Like, it has the Nayera story. It has Nayera testifying. It has all the huge frauds in it. And this girl, Nayera, who turns out, by the way, to be the daughter of the ambassador to Kuwait.
Oh, my.
That's how transparent they were. Now, here's a statement that was made by Lodge Faircloth of North Carolina, U.S. representative. This is a statement he made on the record. Mr. Chairman, the banking committee was hoodwinked by a professional scam artist, Lori Fitzpagato. She should be asked to disclose her entire past and be prepared to defend what I believe is a totally indefensible past. All right, guess what? She went on to work for a group called the Livingston Group, where she is now in Washington, D.C. She also was involved with an interesting story about a girl named Private Jessica Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
It sure is.
And putting out whether that was a real story or not, well, I'll leave that up to people to decide. Then she became involved in 1992, director of and public liaison for the Clinton-Gore Presidential Inaugural Committee. She became an advisor on international issues with Ron Brown. She became vice president at Iridium, and she's now a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. But you see, when you do something like this, you get rewarded. I mean, look where she has gone because of this fraud.
And rapidly.
Yes, yes. I mean, why don't we take these people out and treat them as, you know, guilty of the crime that they have created here? Because that is the biggest, I would say, fraudulent, manipulative story.
And look at the people who died because of their actions, the Iraqis and U.S. soldiers.
Bingo.
Yep.
Yes, absolutely. And then you've got another story, which probably the second greatest story from Desert Storm was the oil well fires. And then we learned later on from many of the special forces that contacted me and said, that story didn't happen the way you were told. And I was just aghast. I don't know why I cannot believe that, you know, that all of these things are happening according to an agenda rather than as they happen.
It's like a script.
It is. It absolutely is. And the oil well fires, same thing happened. And I realized it at first when the first person told me about it, I said, no, I'm not so sure. Then I had five people in different forms of special forces that were involved in this under the direction of a United Nations commander that according to their stories were told to go and how to start the fires. And they told me how they did it in the oil fields. And they all operated independently, so nobody knew anybody else at the time, so all of their stories connected. And it was pretty much the very same thing.
What's the number that you hear about soldiers that died in Iraq and Afghanistan? Over 6,000, right?
Well, that's what we're told. But that is the story, or that is the number of the people, according to the Department of Defense, that actually die on the battlefield. Now, if you are wounded, critically wounded, and you're taken, you know, right off the field or air-evac
down, and then you die, let's say, a year later.
Or even a day later. You're not considered a battlefield casualty.
That's what
I've been told.
Okay.
So the number is probably 20, 30,000 people, if we were to actually know. And not only that.
Yeah, but what about all the Iraqis, too?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know that we...
And we're talking about innocent Iraqis. We're not talking about those that are fighting back. We're talking about, you know, just innocent civilians who have died out there. It's got to be into the tens of thousands.
Well, I think the figure that's now being used by many of the people in Iraq that I've been reading is over a million. And I think that when we look at the number of people that are killed by those wonderful surgical 500-pound bombs that kill, you know, men, women, and children, I don't think we have any idea, because I think that it is so massive.
Well, you know what boggles my mind, Joyce? The fact that we got bin Laden and we're still in Afghanistan, and, you know, I'm still questioning what the heck we went into Iraq for. Why isn't anybody questioning why are we still there when the main mission was supposed to be to get bin Laden back in October of 2001? We're still there, and nobody is questioning the fact that we're there. Mission accomplished. We got him. Why are we still there?
Well, because all we have to do is throw up the term terrorist and use that, because that was conveniently introduced early on, bad guys and terrorists, because, you know, we're not that smart. We can only handle a few names, and so we're told these are bad guy terrorists. We've got to go get them. So anybody that's a terrorist, we got to go kill them, and we have the right to go into that country and kill whomever we need to kill if they are a or could be a, or might grow up to be, a terrorist. Now, the whole bin Laden thing. Now, first of all, if you really believe that they killed bin Laden, and you believe that bin Laden was the man that they said he was, I mean, from a military standpoint, or and from a intelligence standpoint, would you go kill the biggest guy on the block who is responsible for all of the events that occurred on 9/11, or would you want to know, maybe do a little waterboarding on the guy?
I'd waterboard the guy.
Well, of course. Now, I mean, who says, I mean, to me, that was the biggest, I think, red flag in the story. Oh, let's go kill him.
But if I did kill him, I'd sure show the world that I did.
Well, yeah, but why would you kill your largest intelligence asset that might be able to give you all the bad guys' names?
I'd bring them over there with Khalid Sheikh Mohammed at the Guantanamo, and I'd put them together and say, okay, guys, now keep talking.
Now, I mean, you get into Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, okay, KSM. Yeah. He looks like a cartoon character, sort of, and I don't know if he's real or not. We never see any perp walks anymore of the really bad guys,
no,
as you know.
I mean, he purportedly said he's the mastermind. But who,
yes,
who
but
really knows?
It's always the purported or the self, what do they call it? Self-professed. They never say he did it. Just like on the FBI website, they never said bin Laden did 9/11. So, you know, I can't buy into that whole story. And the very fact that it's taken how many years to try KSM? I mean, think about this. The stories that have come out of Guantanamo were, well, he didn't want to come to trial, so we had to halt the hearings. You don't have a taser down there at Guantanamo, and you can't say, excuse me, Mr. KSM, you're going to trial today? Or they had all kinds of strange excuses why they couldn't try him. I think they can't try these guys because they don't have the evidence. And I think that's pretty...
Or they don't want them to say something in court. They don't want them to say something that maybe they know things, maybe we were in cahoots with some people. Maybe that it's like Noriega. Where the heck is the guy?
Yes.
I mean, here was a guy who was a friend of this country, and all of a sudden he changed the rules, or we changed the rules. He's gone. We arrest him. And where is he now? Is he in a French jail? Like, because he got moved someplace else. And nobody can get to him. We have tried for the last 3 years to get interviews with him. I've wanted to interview him, and we can't get to him.
Well, if he doesn't come on Coast to Coast, I mean, you know, this is part of the reason why. Don't blame me for questioning. Don't blame you for questioning. You and I are doing what the people in this country want us to do.
And I want you to say this, Joyce, because it's so important, because you know you get some calls from people that think you're anti-troop, and we know you're not. I want you to just take a moment to tell people how you feel about our fighting men and women.
I feel like these people have been involved in doing what they think is the right thing to do, just like I did, just like you did. We all wanted to do the right thing I mean, it was God, it was red, white, and blue, it was country, and I wanted to be a flight nurse more than anything in this world. My father was a belly gunner on a B-17. My mother was a Navy wave. I mean, in 85 years ago, that was really unique. I always say that my mother outranked my father, and I came from a dysfunctional family, but, you know, military was everything to us. My father, when he would go to bed at night, I knew it would wake us all kids up because he would put on Off We Go Into the Wild Blue Yonder every night when he went to bed. I mean, that was what our family was.
Yeah.
But you see, and I love the soldier. I love the troop. I love those people that are doing the right thing.
You also love this country.
I do. My goodness, I wouldn't be the highest nail on the board sometimes because of any reason other than that. And, you know, it's funny because when I started doing this years ago, people said, you know, to discount me, well, she's just going to write a book. That's why she's doing this. Well, there's no book 17 years later. You know, I'm not doing a book. I'm doing this only because I want these troops to know why they're sick.
Why haven't you stopped? In 10 years that I've known you, you haven't stopped. Of course, it's more than that now. It's closer to 13.
Well, how can you stop when you see them suffering and dying? Let me give you an example. There are many troops that do not know what I'm going to tell you now, and that is that after the Gulf War, 50% of them came back with a sexually transmitted disease. Now, that is like a hidden, dirty secret of the Gulf War. Nobody wants to talk about it. One day I was at a meeting at, I believe it was Santa Rosa, the veterans field there, and I was doing a meeting for veterans, trying to help them understand why they were sick, and I said, and ladies and gentlemen, if your spouse came home from the Gulf War and had an STD and told you that they were not unfaithful to you, please give them a chance. Because these troops, why they came back, it was, we think, because of the vaccines. But they came back with these STDs that nobody wants to talk about. And it was hidden under the, you know, the cover of darkness. And I said, please don't let it destroy your marriage, and please give them a chance. As I was talking, and I'll never forget this, out there in California, a couple in the front row just started crying. They fell into each other's arms. And there were a beautiful black couple, and they just started crying. I mean, it disturbed the whole place. And I waited till they could compose themselves. And they said, we'd like to say something. They came up to the front, and he said, I am a pastor here, and I hope I'm not divulging anything, but I'm not going to give names, but he said, I'm a pastor here. I was a chaplain in the Gulf War. He said, I came home with an STD.
Oh, my.
And he said, my wife, she could never trust me again. He said, our marriage has barely stayed
together. So how in the heck did they get this without being involved sexually with anybody?
I can only imagine that it was something in the vaccines, or it had lowered their immune system. And I'm not trying to play doctor or researcher here, but what we suppose is that it lowered their immune system to the point where, you know, whatever was there from herpes or whatever sort of took the place and the role and overgrew, is all we can imagine. Or
it somehow got them.
And yeah.
Well, you know the old saying, it was in the water. So who knows?
Who knows? But this couple, they stood up in front of that group and they said, please, just know that you need to, you know, tell people about this. And I thought to myself, I can never stop. He said, this just saved my marriage tonight. He said, ladies and gentlemen, I mean, they couldn't avoid telling the audience what had happened.
Well, I would suspect the same thing if I were the couple, if I was on the other end and you know, your spouse had it, wouldn't you?
Well, absolutely. I mean, how can you not? Because that's what, you know, research tells you. And so I said, wow, we have saved a marriage right there. Now, I can't do anything about his STD, but you know what? That was the education. And that's what I've been doing all this time. And I did it until the American Legion would not allow me to go any longer into the facilities and talk to the people and hold meetings. They got a letter from headquarters, and it's on our website at GulfWarVets.com.
They said no more.
The commander sent out a letter that I was no longer allowed to come into American Legions. So, but you know, there was one other example I want to give you, and this is the communicable aspect of the disease, which we've talked about before, is that all of a sudden families started getting sick. I was in Illinois one time at a veterans meeting, and this group lady in the back of the group, I was talking about spreading the disease to your children and to your families, and please be aware that it can happen. And I said there are children at 7 years of age that are getting heart conditions now. And in the back of the room, again, this woman just lets out this gasp. And I thought, wow, what is going on? And she said, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. She said, I got to talk to you. We took a break. I went back and talked to her, and she said, my 7-year-old son is in a psychiatric facility right now because he says he has chest pain. And they say it's not possible for a child to have chest pain. And so they have him in this psychiatric facility, and they're drugging him into oblivion. And she said, can you explain anything about this? And I went on to say that be careful because the troops can bring it back in their uniforms, souvenirs, that kind of thing.
Amazing.
And she said, oh, my God, I got to get out of here. She said, in my son's bedroom, a locker under his bed is all my husband's old uniform.
Oh, full and of that. Full of that.
From what I heard later on, somebody got back to me and told me that they got the child out of the psychiatric treatment center, and they realized that it was due to those uniforms, Jeez. And they destroyed them.
Now, Joyce, before we go to calls, if people are out there and they need help, I know you've given away DVDs before. You've got the websites out there. What do they do? Where do they go?
Well, I want them, first of all, to get Beyond Treason. It's no charge to them. If you want to get Beyond Treason, I will give you a copy of it at no charge. I want everybody to see this, especially if your child is thinking about joining the military. But get the DVD first, and you can call 877-GOLF-VET tomorrow, and we will give you a copy and send it out to you. Look at that. It'll give you an awful lot of information. The whole idea of what to do about this, part of it is knowing what you're dealing with, just like with the bronchiolitis, knowing about the contagiousness of the disease. Now, we haven't seen that much from the second Gulf War as we did in the first Gulf War, but the vaccines, it will explain a lot to people. The depleted uranium, which that, of course, we're seeing suicides, homicides, more than we've ever seen before. But it'll explain what's going on, and especially to parents who are saying to their son or daughter, come on, buck up, get a life, you know, you just don't want to work. These people are dying on the inside.
Yeah.
They really are.
They were. Joyce, stay with us. We haven't taken calls with you in a long time, so we will do that next. Questions and comments with Joyce Riley. Also, if you are a U.S. vet or you're still in the service and you're picking us up off of the Coast Insider stream, check in with us as well. We've got that Skype line open for you at George97313, and we'll give you the numbers in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be back with our final hour phone calls with Nurse Joyce Riley on Coast to Coast AM.